Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, and we have live in the studio, Jay Tierney. Dr. Jay, good morning.
Good morning.
Great. Jay and I, we've known each other for a couple of years now.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
Our pleasure. And we're going to do something a little different today. Generally, our podcasts are geared towards fundraisers. But today, we're going to talk about some really, really, it's great for fundraisers. I think it's really, really relevant for advisors, philanthropic advisors, people dealing with high net worth donors, with financial advisors, right? And even people that are maybe working as fundraisers in larger shops where they are getting into these deeper conversations about money and about the family dynamics of wealth, right? So it's, we always talk in gift planning world about you really have to earn a lot, a deep, deep trust with the donor before you start going down that road about family dynamics, right? I don't think most fundraisers even try to get to that level.
Yeah. Well, it's very personal.
Right.
And that's one of the points I often make is money is as intimate a conversation as there is.
Why? Why is it so?
Yeah.
Is it an American thing? Is it exists in all cultures?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure I'm prepared to give a full answer.
Oh, just take a guess.
I'm sure there's variation, but I think in general, money is quite a intimate conversation.
Yeah.
So I think there's two main reasons why that is. And one is that there's so many meanings embedded in money. Money is a flashpoint for so much of what goes on in our lives that's important.
I mean, we know that, you know, the expression on your deathbed, you're not going to talk about how much money you made, all the possessions you had. You're most likely going to think about, talk about, really appreciate the relationships. Yet we know that intellectually, and I guess emotions take over, right?
Sure. One of the things that money is attached to, I think, especially in our culture, probably, is this idea that the more you have, the more value you have as a person. You know, the American ethos is achieve and break through and be successful. And so often that means in financial terms. Of course, when you step back and think about that idea, a person with more material wealth is a more important person, a more valuable person. It's, I think most people would say, well, that's silly, that's absurd, or even damaging. But it's built in, and we all strive for security, and money is one of the main ways we attain security.
And we were talking about values earlier, before we started recording. And can you give us your definition of values?
Sure. A kind of a breakthrough moment for me in my learning about all this was an idea that I read about from a colleague. So the values are a need. So values are the things we hold dearest, the things we strive for in our lives. But as a need, if you think of values as a need, you see that it's the motive behind so much of what we do. We're driven to promote what's important in our lives. However, a lot of people are not tuned into their true values.
So they're there whether we are conscious of them or not.
Exactly.
And can we change them?
Yes, but only through awareness, only through looking at yourselves and saying, okay, I really want this, but hey, I'm acting as if I want something else. So, just going back to the, you know, accumulation of wealth, people make huge sacrifices. They give up so much of family time, for example, to make more money. And underneath, they're missing something because they're not tuned in and not willing to, because they're not aware, they're not willing to step out of that one mode and say, okay, I have other values. And we all have values in competition with each other. We all have multiple values, multiple layers of values. It's a huge area and not a simple thing to explore with someone. It takes, it's really a peeling back of the layers of your mind to get to what you really want. Mm. So it's
clarity, right? Clarifying.
Yeah.
So your vision, what's important to you.
So often when an advisor meets with a client, you know, the advisor says, well, what are your goals? Mm. What's, you know, what matters to you? And if it's a short conversation, they're not getting to some of the deeper aspirations, truer aspirations that client has. I see that actually as one of the potentially really important roles of an advisor is to help the client uncover what they truly want.
By the way, I didn't mention that you're a psychologist still practicing over 30 years. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a lot, done a lot? You've been in a lot of different situations with probably some too crazy to talk about. And pardon the use of my language there.
I have lots of stories.
Yeah. And you've taken brilliantly, I think, taken that experience and transferred that experience skill sets into Wealth 360.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most satisfying things to do, I think, for anybody, is to take a skill set and transfer it to a different context and apply those skills in a new arena and see how those skills work. And that's been, for me, that's been one of the most satisfying parts of my career is taking my clinical skills, which is skills of listening, exploring, helping people reflect more deeply on what's in their lives and in their minds.
Is that exchange with patients, or you call them patients or clients?
Clients, usually.
Clients.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe more extreme than maybe not more extreme than what you might, a conversation you might have with a high net worth individual. But is it underlying, is it like always, what's that expression? People, the reason that somebody goes to a therapist that they think is the reason is never the real reason, right? It's I'm here because of this, but then 4 weeks later, it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's part of it, but there's all this so my point is, it's all that underlying stuff consistent with all of us, and then we all just handle it differently, and people that go to extremes in whatever way are just, whatever, it's too extreme, not different coping mechanisms.
No, I think it's a continuum, but the work I've done in the financial world is really not very different from the work I've done in the clinical world in terms of connecting with someone, establishing trust through good listening. That's the basis of strong trust, is really being open to hearing what's in that person's mind. And through reflecting it off of me, developing greater self-awareness of emotions, needs, and these conflicting needs that we all have.
Can you give an example? Well, let's say the high net worth donor, what would be conflicting?
Well, I mentioned one before, is the drive to succeed in the material world, in the business world, versus the need to be connected to family and be a dad, be a parent, and be there with your kids. And those are built-in conflicts. I mean, women, I think, especially as women have been more and more sought equality in the workplace, that's been a huge inner conflict for many women, because they want to be home with their kids too.
Yeah, I don't have kids, and I'm not judging. Like, I have a neighbor up the street who, he's a successful lawyer, a young guy, wanted to make partner. Is his two gorgeous little girls that I see him leave at 5:30 in the morning and come home at 8:00 at night. And I'm not judging, but I guess that's a perfect example. I'm like, and he probably makes it up for when he's there, but it just strikes me when you said that. It's like, wow, that conflict.
It's very tough.
Yeah.
And there's no neat solution, because it's, both those values are important to that person, almost equally, it feels at times. So it's really hard to balance those two competing drives.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to bill me for this session. I'm getting a therapy. So you take Cigna insurance? I have the high deductible now.
That brings us to this, one of the fascinating areas that I've learned is in terms of parenting. Mm. And I have, one of my offshoots of my work has been, forming and running Dad Lab, which is a peer mentoring community for new fathers that I've run for the past 2.5 years at Abington Hospital. I now have left Abington. I'm on the verge of establishing Dad Lab at Einstein Medical Center in Philly.
These are Philadelphia-based health systems.
Right. So I've been able to, in learning in depth about the big picture of parenting and the emotional transition from adult to dad, I've applied a lot of that to these questions of values and wealth and how to manage all of that. So in the big picture of parenting, there's this kind of another deep conflict, especially in the beginning. Our task as parents is nurturing the baby and satisfying the needs of that baby. And because the baby is basically helpless at first, not much they can do. Mm-hmm. So it is up to the parents to do sort of everything. But even fairly early on, the question of, okay, how does this child begin to learn to manage their own needs and find a way to self-soothe? Not all the soothing coming just directly from the parents. So like with sleep, sometimes there needs to be a time when you let the baby cry and then they find their own way to soothe themselves and become, that's the beginning of independence and autonomy. And as kids develop, they want more and more independence and autonomy. And parents very often have the urge to still stay in control and guide those kids. But so there's this balance. I mean, the ultimate goal, and it's interesting to talk about this with brand new parents, but the ultimate goal is to launch independent, autonomous people who finding their own way in their life, which may differ in some ways in terms of values from the parents. And these value differences are the source of a lot of pain if they're not managed well. So again, the first step is being aware that these differences are likely to happen. And parents need to work on accepting that their kid is going to be in the world in certain ways that are counter to what the parents want.
Yes. And so for the either World War II generation donor, baby boomer donor that's looking at their kids and looking at their wealth, and what's the, I think it's Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett quote, I want to leave just enough money to my kids so that they can do anything, but not so much that they'll do nothing.
Yes. and I like that quote too. And that speaks to a balancing act that's involved. This leads to another really key sort of human dilemma of wanting to be independent, autonomous, have your own way, self-determination, which is a very American, mantra.
Yes.
But we have another need that's just as important that goes counter to that need for control and autonomy, which is belonging, which is good relationships. And in for a relationship to work, there has to be accommodation and giving in and compromise. Mm. And so those two skills need to be managed in balance. Because if you are so successful and you go all the way that way, you may lose the ability to accommodate and have good relationships. So you end up, I guess, a Howard Hughes type scene of, all powerful, super rich, and alone. Mm. Not what most people really want.
No.
I don't think what anybody really wants. Mm. Of course, you can go too far the other way. Some people are too accommodating, too giving in, and that leads to exploitation. So this balance between belonging and autonomy is a key dynamic. And again, with more awareness, only through awareness can you do your best at balancing those two needs.
It's great stuff. While you're talking, I'm wondering how an advisor could ever get, are they qualified to have these deeper conversations? B, I would think for you, tell me if I'm wrong, that somebody coming to you as a psychologist, you're the expert, I need help. I guess other times, sometimes they're not coming voluntarily, but mostly maybe they're coming voluntarily because they know you're the man and you have the expertise, I need help, versus the advisor who is really thought of, I guess it depends on the advisor, but right? You know where I'm going with this? It's like,
how far do you go into the personal dynamics of the individual and of the family?
Yeah.
My view is that when an advisor meets with a family, the family dynamics are actually totally present in the room. They're being played out. They're there, but somewhat invisible. But I think it comes out when there's pain. If there's enough of a trust in that relationship, a client may start to admit certain pain and certain dissatisfaction with their lives or the dynamics of the family, the relationships in the family. And that's an opening. So the next question could be from the advisor, what is it that you really want? What would be a way for this situation to move towards something better?
I love that. Let's repeat that because that's worth repeating. The question is,
what is it that you really want to happen in your family?
Nice.
And this is a whole sort of core approach that I take, which changed from my original training in psychology, which was more the medical model. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with this person? What's wrong with this family? And now I've shifted to a much more strength-based appreciative approach, actually called appreciative inquiry, which flips that on its head and says, what are the strengths in this person and in this family? What's working really well? What is this family at its best? Let's understand that and build on that, build on those strengths and find the move toward the ideal through building on what's best, the best that's already there.
Beautiful. So that's fantastic. So that's a way to gauge to see whether they're open without being confrontational about it, and then saying, who the hell, you're our advisor. Who are you to ask me those kind of questions?
Exactly.
Right? And open and see if they'll open that door further, and then it just maybe organically happens.
The strength-based approach is so powerful because it is much less likely to stir up defensiveness. So when you ask someone, well, what's wrong with this relationship?
Yeah,
that's criticism, and that sparks shame. And whenever we feel shame, we put our arms up and try to defend ourselves emotionally. But if somebody says, well, what's been the best moment in your family that you want to expand on, that triggers pride, which is on the other end of that spectrum of shame. And there's much less defensiveness. There's an openness. There's a willingness. Who doesn't like to talk about some of their best moments?
Yeah.
So that opens the door for a lot better relationships and a lot more progress towards what the person really wants.
Great. And I am going to sit down and write out these questions and think about how it relates to fundraising, because there's definitely a way to, even just working with donors one-on-one.
Sure. Yeah. Well, when I apply my approach to fundraising, one of the questions I ask is, what's been the most satisfying, exciting use of money in your life? When has money been the most positive force for good in your life? That's a big opening to understand what their true highest values really are. So, for example, with me, I can answer that question for me.
Please.
This is about the money story. That's another core concept I have. Everybody has a money story, which is their internal narrative about what money means, what actually money is for. And so that cuts to their truest core values. I grew up, my parents were children of the Great Depression. None of this namby-pamby Great Recession that we went through. That's child's play. You know, in the 30s, people were
jumping out of a window.
Scared literally to death.
Yeah.
And struggling to make it. That mentality of scarcity was present in my family growing up in the 50s and 60s. I absorbed that. So I have that program in me that still operates. I still can obsess over a small purchase. I want that. Do I really need that? It's $20. I mean, and so I can get, that's my initial default mode. I think it through and I go, okay, $20, I can handle it. But when it came to the very biggest expenditure I've ever made, I had an easy time. And that was my kids' college education.
Oh, nice.
I was willing to take a pretty big chunk of my savings, and because I wanted to launch them without debt. That was education is a really important thing. for me. And
values.
That's a core value. Right. Absolutely. Because my parents, as a first generation, as children of immigrants, education was the pathway to make it in America.
Did your parents have college education?
The first. My mom did. My dad had part of one.
And your mom?
They were the first ones to go to college in the family.
And for a woman back, what time period was your mom?
In the late 30s.
Not common for women back then, right?
Much less common.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's cool. What did your parents do?
My mom was a teacher, a New York City public school teacher. My dad was an IRS agent.
Uh-oh. Gee, look at the time. We gotta go.
He was at the height of his career. He was the chief of the audit division in Brooklyn.
Mm. Mm. He's got.
So he had some interesting information.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Anybody ever threaten him or?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Like, would he knock on people's doors kind of thing? Or?
I don't know.
When you say agent, I just picture somebody showing up at an office or somebody's front door.
Well, I mean, I think that was the title, IRS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Employee was an, yeah, was an agent.
Yeah, that's great.
So they're both civil servants, and that was again security, because it's solid.
But I know in sales, and started my first half of my career in sales, they would talk about you're either running away from something or running towards something, and kind of like a scarcity. I know it's the same thing. Maybe I'm confusing my idioms here, but just a scarcity mindset. Like, that's been my thing, is like, maybe similar, but like, being a business owner, and when I was a straight commission sales guy, what drove me more was the fear of never getting another client.
Yeah.
Versus, and so I would tend to work with people that were not very nice or not respectful to me at a younger age. I don't have that now. And as I get older, I'm more aware of it and more discerning, hopefully. But it was that for me, that money, in one way, it helped me do well, because a straight commission sales guy, it was like,
it drove you.
Where's the next one? Got to get the next one. Got to get the next one. I don't know where the next one's going to come from again. So I just need to keep, but there was a lot of uneasiness around that, and never being satisfied. Yeah.
Well, the scarcity idea is a really powerful one. People are running from scarcity, and they think, okay, what's on the other end of that polarity? Abundance. And so there's this idea out there that a lot of people promote: live abundantly and think abundantly. Think of, there's no limits. It's just more, and everything is good. But some other thinkers that I've read about have a really interesting perspective. Abundance and scarcity are two ends of a polarity. And actually, in the abundance model is fear of scarcity.
Mm.
So how do you manage that polarity? It's like you're stuck on that scale. Mm. And the solution is a triangle. At the top, sufficiency. What's enough? Mm. Not too little or too much. What's enough? But then the next important question, enough for what? And then you're back to the values conversation. How do you want to live your life? What's really important in your life? And how does money allow you to do that? How does enough money? It's not unlimited money. You can live a fully abundant life with limited resources. Most of us have limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
So sufficiency is a really important and powerful concept that I think needs to be talked about more.
At the beginning of this, I said this podcast is geared more towards advisors, but this is for everybody. Almost weekly, I would say at least two or three times a month, someone will call me, a fundraiser, and says, oh, I want to get into consulting. You're apparently a successful consultant. Love to pick your brain, thinking about leaving my job.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my first advice is, what are your three core values? I love the rule of threes. What are your three core values around your work? Like, for me, is independence. I can't work for somebody else. I've done it. Maybe I worked at the Funtown Arcade in Seattle City in 1972, the only job I ever got fired from. But I can't, I need that independence. The second thing is, for me, I need to do what is purposeful work for me, right? Putting a roof on, cleaning offices is purposeful, absolutely. But it has to, it really has to meet that.
It has to fit your purpose.
Yeah. And then if I can afford it, I'd really like to do work that I'm passionate about. And I'm very blessed that I found something, right? So I tell people that drives my decisions. So when I do interim work where people will bring me in for a couple of days a week until they hire somebody, a replacement for the plan giving department, invariably they will say, are you interested in the job? And it's tempting because I love my clients and I love the work. It is purposeful, right? Fundraising. It's something I'm passionate about. I love doing it, but it doesn't give me that independence. So it's like, you know what? It fits two or three, but it has to fit all three. So that's my first advice, completely unqualified advice to people, other than from my life experience, to say, if you can, figure those three core values out. And ideally, I mean, everybody's in a different financial situation. If you can afford it, let your decisions be driven by those three core values.
But see, again, we're back to the question of values conflicts. Mm. That there are so many we all have multiple values that overlap and can pull at each other. Mm. The need for security, the need to make more money, that's important. The need to be satisfied. An interesting term I've read recently is funded contentment.
Mm. What does that mean?
That means everybody wants a life that's fulfilling, purposeful, engaging, uses their strengths. And money is one component. You have to have enough money in order to pursue the areas that will give you contentment.
Right. So it's either do what you're passionate about or do what you need to do financially, but figure out a way to be more passionate, more happy about it, or more content.
Yeah, I mean, there's many different ways to manage it. I think I hear lots of stories about people in long-term careers who are miserable, hate doing what they're doing, feel trapped. Oh, but I have to support my family. Yeah. I have a wife and kids. I have to make this kind of money. Do you really? I mean, that's when you start to, again, peel back the layers and try to get to what they really want and how they might rebalance things and give something up in order to gain something more.
Yes.
And it's very complex. And again, very personal.
Yes. Yeah.
And to do that requires a real openness.
Mm. What haven't we covered today?
Let's see. There's a quote that I think summarizes a lot of this from a book called The Geometry of Wealth by Brian Portnoy, which I recommend. It's an excellent book.
And can you spell it? So Brian
Portnoy, P-O-R-T-N-O-Y. The Geometry of Wealth. Mm. And one of the opening quotes in the book is, money courses through both daily decisions and grand contemplations. Mm. It's the oil in the engine of everyday life, without which metal grinds metal. With it, the engine operates, which isn't to say it drives in the right direction.
What does that mean for you? What comes up for you? Let me throw a psychology term. What comes up for you, Jay, when you read that?
Well, my mother, when I was six, it's about awareness of what you really want from money. Money is involved in almost every decision in our lives, even some very small ones all the way up to the biggest ones. So money so often is seen as a goal unto itself, a purpose unto itself. Mm. And that's something that trips people up in big ways. So again, finding some of the core purposes, core values that are yearning to be part of your life, but have been marginalized in your life out of fear and lots of reasons. So getting to those core values is an awareness of those core values is really sort of my core mission in my professional life. Because to me, that's the most pivotal awareness to have that leads to a much better life.
Beautiful. Good way to wrap things up here. So the takeaways, that was a big one, right? So what was it? Socrates, going to sound like an intellectual, but I'm not.
Know thyself.
What is it? No, to know others?
Know thyself.
First, know thyself,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
So we need to get clarity. I love that word, clarity, right? What's my vision, my purpose, clarity, right? And my money story, right? So when I'm fundraising or advising clients. Mm-hmm. And then what would be number two? I love that example about how to actually for the advisor, they're there with the family. That great question. Do you remember what the question was?
Yeah. What do you really want? What do you want more of?
I love that.
What's most enjoyable, satisfying? Mm. How can you and I help you generate more of that good stuff, that good experience?
Yeah. And again, great. That's a great thing to say as a fundraiser to a donor, right? Even one on one. Just generally.
Yeah. What mission that you could fund would give you the most satisfaction in terms of seeing your money make a difference in the world, and having that be the prime goal of the fundraiser, to connect to that donor's truest aspirations for their money, I think is a huge advantage.
Great.
A huge plus.
We got number three? We have a number three? I'm sure we do. What could that be? Number three takeaway.
Well,
I'm thinking the trust thing. You know, how do we, there's a business friend, acquaintance of mine, Dan Shepherd. He does plan giving training. Great, great system, program. And he said, he has a question that I love. It's, what do I need, either, if we just met, is what do I need to do to earn the right or the privilege to have a deeper level conversation with you about your giving and your goals? Or if we've known each other a while, Jay, have I earned the right to have a deeper level conversation with you and your spouse, your family, about the impact you want to have and how you might do that? It might not just be writing a check, which I love. But that question, again, I've applied that question to so many different areas of my life, is just asking for permission, right?
Yeah, I think listening is such a, it's so basic a skill that we lose sight of actually how we're doing it. Mm. And the better an advisor of any kind listens, truly listens to the client. And that listening is not just receiving, it's also questioning. The deepest listening involves powerful questions and seeing what comes from those questions and then continuing down that path. So listening is, it's a skill that is actually at the heart of every successful advisor, in my mind, is because they're good listeners and they're connecting and generating that trust. And that's the foundation for all the good work.
Mm. There's a quote, listen not to respond, listen to understand. Right? Because I feel like people so often, they'll listen, but it's like they can't wait for you to shut up so they can start talking again.
As the person's talking, they're making the next point in their head instead of really just absorbing what's there.
And being present.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, do you have, can you come back? Is there more stuff to talk about if you come back sometime?
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, this is fun. This is great.
Yeah.
And how can people, anything you want to, I know you said you don't want to plug anything, but anything you want to promote?
Yeah. What I've been doing is this webinar on how to talk to your kids about money, which is really talking to your kids about values. And it's a topic that I hear from a number of advisors is really wanted by high net worth families, because money is such a hard topic to talk about. They don't know how to get it started, but they know it's important.
Yes.
So this webinar, which can also be done in person, of course, even better, because then you get a chance to interact.
Anywhere in the country?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. To me, this is a pivotal skill and a process that if I can help families start to have those money conversations, it leads to lots of good things.
Nice. And how will people get in touch with you?
They can call me at 267-241-0422 or jay@wealth360network.com.
And that's 360.
Yes.
Wealth360network.com.
Yes.
Great. Jay, thank you. This is awesome.
Oh, you're very welcome, Joe. Thank you.
Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.